Good morning. Good morning and welcome to the First Parish Church on this Easter Sunday. To all who celebrate, a happy Easter to each and every one. Thank you for being here as a part of this day. As always, coffee hour follows our service. Through the door and down the hall, signs will direct you to Fellowship Hall. If you're a guest with us this morning, we extend you a very warm and special welcome and thank you for choosing to be here today to be part of this community. And now I'd ask you to take just a moment to turn and greet neighbors seated nearby you. Please introduce yourselves if you've not met before with a word of welcome. If you would light our chalice. Our call to worship this morning is by Evan Carville Zimmer. If we lived in another climate, our souls might speak other languages. We might speak oasis or permafrost, dry season or monsoon. Our souls speak spring. Our souls speak green shoots pushing through last year's leaves. Our souls speak flower buds stretching to the sun. Our souls speak mud puddle, nest building, damp earth, worm castings, tiny green leaves, and frog choruses. We speak spring because spring sings in us. We gather here this morning to nurture our faith in our own growing our courage to push through, growing our blossoming in beauty, growing our small part in the spring of this world. Come, let us worship here together. The Morning Hangs a Signal is our opening hymn. Number 40 in the gray hymnal, I invite you to rise in body and spirit. Love is the spirit of this church and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Please be seated.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, today I want to talk to you about Easter. And the reason that we celebrate Easter, for some people, for like me, it's the chance to be in like what some people said, to be with family. That really is my prime reason for celebrating Easter. For some of us, it might be the fact that you get Easter baskets or get to go on Easter egg hunts. Even high schoolers can and college kids can enjoy the Easter baskets, and maybe some adults as well. But for other people in our church who identify as Christian, and one of the things about this church, if you don't know, if you're a visitor, is that Unitarian Universalism lets everyone take their own personal faith beliefs and bring them together in a community of love and support. And there are people in our congregation that identify as Christian and that believe in God and believe that Jesus was the Son of God. And so Easter for those people has a different meaning. It's not just about family and Easter baskets. It's also about remembering and honoring the life of someone that they honor, named Jesus Christ. And I don't know if Jesus was God. I don't know if Jesus was the Son of God. But I do know from what I've read about Jesus that he was a pretty amazing person. There's a word called prophets, and a prophet is someone who goes and spreads news and tries to change people's opinions. Sometimes I think we would call that social justice in this day and age. And Jesus, I believe, would be a primary upholder of social justice and really admire what we do here as a church. And you know why I know this? Or I think I know if the stories in the Bible have truth, and I believe that for some people they do, and for some pieces about Jesus they definitely were, is that he decided that he didn't like the way the world was. And he decided he was going to work on changing that. And he did it even though people didn't like what he was doing. Some people did, a lot of people didn't. And they put him down and they mocked him. There's records of him being spit at. Yet he continued to spread the word. And some of the news that he wanted to spread, or some of the ways that he was hoping that he could get people to think about, was to treat other people well, to treat other people the way that we wished we could be treated, to treat women better, to treat children better, to treat those with illnesses. Oh, back in the day when Jesus was around, and probably sometimes still now, there was this belief that if you were sick that you should be outcast from society, and Jesus didn't believe in that. He also said that we should include everyone, not just people that were Jewish at his age but and his time, that everyone should be accepted. Does that sound familiar? That is exactly what we do here. And the story of Jesus says that Jesus died. And the other piece of that is that Jesus knew that he was going to die, yet he didn't walk away from that. He still continued to face it. And that's one of the things. Certainly, some of us have faced that. Some of us have faced cancer. Some of us have faced death and needed to go on. And it's hard. It's really hard. And then other times we have things that are not so life-changing, like you might have a big test, or you might have someone in your class that's making fun of you. You might have a job that you don't particularly care for, or even if you like your job, there's those days where you wake up and you're like, oh God, I really don't want to go to work today. And yet we continue to do it. The people that are working on social justice here, the people that are working for Black Lives Matter, that are working for domestic violence, that are working for prisoners, all do that because they do believe that they can make a chance and make a difference for someone else. And I think, like Jesus, we even though it's hard, we continue to do it because it's the right thing to do. And so in that line, I encourage you all to to find the things that are difficult and plug through them, especially those things that are going to help you or someone else. At this time, we're going to carry the light of our lantern, the light of our chalice, by the way, of the lantern, to our religious education program. Of special note, usually kids stay down in religious education. Today, we're going to rejoin our parents here for the final hymn and then singing of the Hallelujah chorus. So please look around and make sure you know where your parents are so you know where to go back to. All right? And Reagan Murray is going to carry our chalice today. I mean, our lantern today.
I invite you to join me in the spirit of prayer and meditation. Spirit of life, we gather this Easter morning to rejoice in the ongoing rhythm of life within and around us. We are reminded of our inner beauty, a deep reflection of the image of your creative power. Yet for all the beauty that lives in us, lives among us, we doubt its realization. We roll stones across entrances. We build walls instead of gates. We close our fists instead of open our arms. Spirit of resurrection, remind us this day of the power of hope to triumph over fear, the power of love to prevail over the horror of hate, the potential for peace to be victorious over hostility. Spirit of love, we hold in our prayers those who face uncertainty. May they find solid ground. We hold in our prayers those who face illness. May there be a path toward greater well-being. We hold in our prayers those who struggle with addiction. May they find support and a way forward. We hold in our prayers those who have endured violence, those who seek safety. May they soon find the peace and security they seek. So may it be. Amen. During this month of April, this congregation continues its support of the Southeast India Project. For your sustaining support of this community right here and of the work of the Southeast India Project, each of us extend our thanks to all as the morning's offering is received. Our first reading this morning is from a poem by Wendell Berry entitled Manifesto, Mad Farmer Liberation Front. So, friends, every day do something that won't compute. Love the Lord, love the world, work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what we have not encountered, we have not destroyed. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into mold. Call that prophet. Prophesy such returns. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. So long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? Swear allegiance to what is nighest your thoughts. As soon as the generals and the politicos can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. Leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection. And from the Gospel of Luke. But on the first day of the week at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly 2 men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground, but the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you while he was in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified and on the third day rise again." Then they remembered his words. And returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and all the rest. Now it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them who told this to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb, stooping and looking in. He saw the linen cloths by themselves. Then he went home, amazed at what had happened. Our hymn is O Day of Light and Gladness, number 270 in the Gray Hymnal. Please be seated. Having observed the Sabbath, Mary Magdalene, Joanna, and Mary, the mother of James, prepared the customary oils and spices used to anoint the body of one who had died. They set off early in the morning for the place they knew Jesus' body to be buried. This last act of compassion and care was familiar to them. It's something they would have done before, for a family member perhaps, or for a neighbor. It was something women were expected to do. And this is where what expected ends, and where the audacity, the intrepid boldness of these women to go anyway, where that begins. As they walk along together, I imagine them speaking quietly. They must know they may well be facing an impossible task. All versions of the story make mention of a huge stone rolled across the opening of the tomb. Some say this was done so that Jesus' followers would not come in the night and steal the body, creating the appearance of a resurrection. Perhaps as they walked, these women assured one another that they were strong enough to move the stone themselves. Perhaps they had simply agreed that they would give it their all, let nothing get in the way of custom or tradition. Perhaps they believed that they would find a way, that surely there would be someone nearby who could come and help them. And perhaps, in case nothing worked, maybe they had plan B, some acceptable way that they would honor the obligations of final respect. We're never told how the stone was rolled away, only that it was, clearing the way for the women to go in. They entered the tomb and were immediately confronted with the improbable. There is no body. And there they are, tense, uncertain, struggling to understand, and then terrified by the sudden presence of two men in dazzling clothes. All three women turned away, diverted their eyes, looked to the ground, and the men tell them, "Jesus is risen." Maybe this is what they hoped for. Maybe they did remember something Jesus had said, maybe long ago for them, no matter. This improbable news is now theirs to share. It is theirs and theirs alone. In a culture where women's testimony, even on minor matters, was not given credibility. As the historian Josephus explained, from women, let not evidence be accepted because of the levity and temerity of their sex. Perhaps it was the courage of faith, the courage of companionship with others who had experienced the same. Wherever it came from, it was courage that led these women to go to the others who had known Jesus so well to tell them the news. To those who listened, the women's words seemed an idle tale. No one believed them. Peter had to go and see for himself. However we come to the story of the resurrection, the women who are at the heart of it faced the impossible, confronted the improbable, and found the courage to go anyway. though Wendell Berry uses a dramatically different vocabulary, the poem Manifesto is about these same things: facing the impossible, confronting the improbable, and finding the courage to go anyway. Early on, Berry offers lighthearted advice, words of encouragement to us. So, friends, he says, every day do something that won't compute. The last line of the manifesto is also the bottom line. Everything leads to this: practice resurrection. Between the encouraging advice and the bottom line, there is a fairly lengthy and somewhat odd list of suggestions he offers. I'm sure they're intended to get us thinking, to imagine our own lists that would fit between do something that doesn't compute and practice resurrection, love someone who does not deserve it, denounce the government and embrace the flag, hope to live in that free republic for which it stands, ask questions that have no answers, say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into mold, call that prophet, and prophesy such returns. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. Do something that won't compute. Just as Mamie Till Mobley did in the middle of the last century, when she openly confronted the racist violence that killed her 14-year-old son, Emmett. She endured impossible grief when he was murdered while visiting relatives in Mississippi. And then she made the improbable decision to keep Emmett's casket open at his funeral. She found the courage to let the world see him, to see what racist violence looks like, what it does to children like her son. There was just no way I could describe what was in that box. No way, she said. And I just wanted the world to see. I wanted the world to see what they did to my baby. This is the practice of resurrection. Resurrecting respect for the life of this 14-year-old. Resurrecting the hope of justice. Resurrecting the power of truth. Do something that won't compute, as Emma Gonzalez does. On February 14th, Emma endured impossible fear. In just 6 minutes and 20 seconds, 17 people were killed at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Then she and her classmates made the improbable decision not to keep silent. On Saturday, March the 24th, Emma spoke to hundreds of thousands gathered in Washington, D.C. for the March for Our Lives. In the 6 minutes and 20 seconds she was at the podium, the same amount of time it took for those 17 to be killed, Emma found the courage to remember her friends, to remember each one by name. And then she found the courage to stand silently for just over 4 minutes. Some say it is the loudest silence they have ever heard. Her speech concluded with these words: "Fight for your lives before it's someone else's job." This is the practice of resurrection: to bring those you have lost with you to the struggle, to speak when others demand your silence, to hold the sound of silence as the loudest voice, saying it is long past time that gun violence ends. When incessant news coverage of a politics of hate and fear and blame is interrupted by the news of the death of one more student, teacher, young black man, a trans woman, when selective outrage separates things worthy of concern from those that are not, I tell you, there aren't enough hours in the day to practice all the resurrection we could use right now. Still, every time ordinary folks like us move toward the impossible, confront the improbable, and find the courage to go anyway, every time we do that, something changes. When we do what we can, standing along the roadside with signs of peace, hanging a banner and staking our claim to its message, sharing our offering with congregations doing good in the world, planting 100 trees, when we do what we can, whatever it is, when we do what we can to create even a little more justice, a little more respect, a little more hope in this life, something changes. Something in us and something between us changes. Right then, right there, right now. We know. We know how to practice resurrection. Look around. We are not alone. This is our journey together, a journey to better ourselves, a journey to a better world, a journey to a more promised land. On April 13, 1742, Handel's Messiah was first performed in Dublin to benefit 3 charities, Prisoners' Debt Relief, the Mercer's Hospital, and the Charitable Infirmary. 700 people attended that premiere, and their donations secured the release of 142 indebted prisoners. Now it is our turn to sing.
In continuing a tradition here at FPC, we invite anyone who would like to come up and sing the Hallelujah Chorus with us to do so now. People of all ages are invited to do this. Children are especially welcome. And you don't need any experience or even to be a music reader to come up and have some fun. So if you'd like some music, Judy and Dave will have copies for you. Sopranos are over on this side. If you sing hi, sopranos wave. Altos are up here. Tenors here, and basses over here by the piano. Come on up, grab your spot, and get to perhaps make a debut performance at FPC if you'd like.